Welcome to Postscript. My name is Dave. I'm one of the pastors here at Compass Point Bible Church. And today with me is Pastor Chris Heiss.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you, Chris?
Doing well after a long weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has been a long weekend.
Yeah, it's always nice to have that extra day. I kind of had forgotten about it until Sunday, so that's extra nice.
I know. It's great. We, in our household, we enjoyed the long weekend by all being sick together. So that was just just lovely. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, here we are.
We're here to debrief Sunday a little bit, to talk about the sermon. And this week, to talk about Lent. We kind of did like a bit of a one-off, a bit of a start into our Lent series. We're going to be talking about fasting, but we didn't get there yet.
Yep.
You and I had talked a bit about this. You preached. I did the music. I talked a little bit about Ash Wednesday, kind of the starting point of Lent. And you unpacked a little bit of Lent in one of the stories in Chronicles about kind of a really helpful analogy for us of understanding what's happening here. So want to give us a little recap from what you said on Sunday?
Yeah, I would love to. I mean, first of all, a disclaimer, I'm not a Lent expert. You know, I've grown up over the years in traditions or different time periods where there's been almost a disdain at times for Lent, or sometimes when it's been more embraced or whatever. But so it was neat to dive into that. I think it's a really helpful season. And even for me this week was kind of exciting to open up my eyes and my perspective to it. But yeah, we just talked about this idea that Lent's been celebrated in the church longer than actually Christmas Day. You know, way back in the 300s, there was this period of preparation before Easter. So there's a bit of history there for sure. But we looked at a story, like you said, out of Chronicles of King Asa and just how he was called back to God through the prophet Azariah. And in doing so, made some really significant choices in terms of preparation and creating space for God to work. And so when seeking the Lord, went out and cleared out some idols and some temples and things that had been built to other gods, and kind of, you know, did this process of clearing out the kingdom, but then also did some building, built a new altar to the Lord, booted his grandmother out of power, who was serving as queen because she was continuing to worship other gods and kind of push that agenda. And so did some clearing and did some building. And so we use that as a bit of an analogy for this season leading up to Easter, that we might prepare ourselves for growth and create space for God. And really, in a lot of ways, it's a larger picture, a larger analogy of something we've been talking about a lot at Compass Point, this idea of creating a rule of life and having intention and putting rhythms and patterns in place that support our life with God. And so it's got this kind of specific application over these next few weeks as we maybe think differently about, you know, preparing ourselves for the Good Friday story, for the Easter celebration, but then also this larger application as we look at our lives and are trying to slow down and create some space for us to notice God better and respond to him.
Yeah. So I want to like take a step back a little bit and talk a little bit about the church calendar, because we've, we're dabbling with it more than maybe we have in our past as a church. And I think from what I've seen from people, different people have different reactions to it. There are some people who really enjoy it, who grew up with it, who enjoy kind of it's coming back. There are some people who this is fresh, it is invigorating, it's fun. And there are some people who are like, I'm not Catholic. Why are we doing this? Like, and kind of look at this with suspicion.
Yeah.
So like, talk to me a bit about that. How do we, what do you think, is good and helpful about the church calendar? And is there a side of it that can get a little out of hand and maybe becomes unhelpful?
Yeah. So Dave, I already admitted, you know, in the beginning of this, this podcast, you know, this idea that in different seasons of my life in ministry, I've probably had different views about the church calendar. You know, there's been times when I've celebrated it, times when I've had some disdain for it, times when I've maybe kind of been in this mushy middle of not really caring that much. And so I think, you know, I can probably relate to different people who might be feeling differently about it. But certainly there's something beautiful about these traditions and liturgies that call us back to God. And I've often heard you, Dave, talk about this. My life is so full of distraction. It is so hurried. There's just so many noises coming at me, whether that's within my family or culturally or responsibilities, that I think there's something incredibly valuable about having traditions and practices in our lives that remind us of God, that call us back to God, that You help us to pay close attention to certain themes, certain stories, certain things that we know of Christ. And so a lot of the traditions that have been put in the calendar allow us to do that. Now, there's always a chance for those things to get off track.
Sure.
There just always is. I mean, we can overemphasize things. We can underemphasize things. We can emphasize the wrong things. Mm. There's a chance for those events or practices to become in and of themselves the kind of the end, mm-hmm. you know, or become kind of idolatrous in a way where we can say like, hey, I did that Lent thing. I gave up this or whatever. Right. And then all of a sudden that becomes like how I view myself, you know, as a better Christian.
Yeah.
That's not really the goal in my mind of the practice, you know,
of course not.
It's about proximity to Christ, intimacy with Christ, joy, you know, experiencing God's mercy, receiving God's love. And so if it's helping us to do those things individually and as a community, I think there's great value in kind of following along and celebrating some of the things that are in the church calendar. And I'm not an expert on this, so
right.
I'm just speaking from my experience, but I'm curious what you would say, because yeah. certainly you've had to come up against this, I'm sure, over and over again in leading worship and leading churches and things like that. So
yeah,
what's been your experience?
It's unique. So I would argue that every church practices liturgy of some kind. Every church has liturgies. Liturgies are just simply like repeated patterns and things we engage in.
Sure.
So like in the same way that we talk about rule of life and we say like what we're asking people to do is develop an intentional rule of life that helps form you into Christ, I think every church has a liturgy. Every tradition has a liturgy. And some of those things are really good. And some of those things are probably like counterformational, or at least like not being intentional enough to be really helpful.
Right.
And so I have found in my own life, and again, being raised largely in this tradition, but also with smatterings of other things and experience in both more mainline and more charismatic traditions, I have found the church calendar to be this really wonderful thing that tracks with me like the seasons, and kind of pulls me into the story of Jesus every year.
Right.
Which is like, it's both something I know, and if I'm honest, like my initial reaction is sometimes like, I'm tired of that. I'm good. Not only do I know it, but every year I have to like plan it, which is a weird thing to do. And I think when practiced well, the church calendar and things like Lent and Advent and other moments in the calendar can shape us and can give us enough freedom to engage with them in a way that's helpful in that moment, in that season, and unearth parts of myself and parts of the story of God and parts of God's presence in my life that I desperately need. And again, like, this year, and I want to talk a little bit about this actually, like we had the church calendar tradition of Ash Wednesday falling on this cultural tradition of Valentine's Day. And like, I know people who would say like, wow, I haven't heard it this year, I'll say, but like I've heard in the past, like, wow, we don't need to be celebrating Ash Wednesday, yet who have no problem with Valentine's Day or Mother's Day or other, these other cultural like calendar things that we just embrace because we have. And the question is again, like, who came up with them? What are they there for? And they're not all bad. Is it bad to celebrate our romantic love for one another? Not at all. Like, that is a gift from God. Go read Song of Solomon, right? There's plenty of romantic love in the Bible. It is to be celebrated. But I think there's also, if we are followers and apprentices of Jesus, there's something really good about asking ourselves, how does this season, this moment, how does this align me? And you talked a little bit earlier about the, you know, the analogy of tearing down idols and how this is both like a unique season for that to kind of make room and build new things, but also something we do every moment of every day, right? We wake up, we go through different seasons, and I think our relationships feel it. I don't know, like as parents or as spouses, I certainly feel like that's constantly a thing. Like I've dealt with this thing, and it's not like, check, I'm good now. It's like, okay, on to the next thing that's right. like we've been ignoring or I'm just becoming more aware of.
Right.
And I think that, yeah, there's an invitation in the church calendar to do it well. But as you said, anything that becomes legalistic, and often the more familiar we are with it, the easier it is to become legalistic. Most weird family traditions that are unhelpful started as really good family traditions.
Right.
Same is true in the church. So I think there is something nice about the freshness and like the evangelical Protestantness of like, let's make it new, let's reform it. And I hope that's what we're trying to do with the church calendar, which of course is not, it's not a quote unquote Catholic thing. And I know people who've had maybe less than great experiences in that background and some who found it helpful, but it's actually like the church calendar is a church thing. We talk about wanting to be like the early church. Well, this is that.
Right.
And like, Reformation didn't happen in the early church. It happened much later. Right. And like, just because the church gathered and worshiped and used a calendar doesn't mean we need to throw that out too. It's a bit of baby in the bathwater thing.
Yeah. So. I mean, Paul, I think, often talks about these traditions as being like a window, right? So they help us to see into what's true and what's real and really get a better picture, a better view of God. They can be really helpful. I think it's when we detach them from that, that they're sometimes not helpful. And sometimes, you know, as like you've kind of talked about it, over time, things can become detached from their original purpose, right? So, you know, I might celebrate Christmas, but not really have any idea of how that connects in with Jesus or, you know, any hope for the world or those kind of things. And so I think that's true with these traditions as well. You know, it's interesting. One of the things we touched upon on Sunday too is the cyclical nature of kind of formation. And really, in a lot of ways, you know, I see that in the church calendar, right? Because it's something that repeats over and over again. And so, you know, I'm just kind of scratching the surface, you know, or entering a little bit more each year. And then it comes back again. And so it kind of, it's this chance to kind of grow a little bit and prepare a little bit and then to go on with my life and go on to the next thing. And then it comes again and I get to just grow a little more, or I get to prepare a little more. And, you know, particularly these seasons of Lent and Advent, which you mentioned, I've been really struck by this idea that they are seasons of preparation for Christmas and for Easter. And it's a little bit weird. Like, I don't often do that. I don't spend, you know, 4 or 5, 6 weeks preparing for something very much, you know? But it is, there's something to be said there, you know, and this need we have to slow down and kind of prepare ourselves, because God is doing something in these moments as we celebrate. And am I open to it? Am I ready for it? You know?
Well, and at the same time, I think we do prepare for things like, you know, to get ready for Christmas, what do we have to do? Well, most of us have to decorate. We have to buy gifts. We have to make family plans, which can just take so much time and energy. Right? There are like, or we do the same with anniversaries or birthdays or these things that come up annually, or sometimes these big one-off, like you won't meet many people who get engaged and they're like, hey, we're getting married next weekend.
Right.
Like, no, people need months, if not a year plus to plan and prepare. So like we understand these things. It's just, we don't often apply them to our own.
Well, a lot of that planning is practical
in
the sense that it's like task based.
Yes.
And I think the difference here is that yes, there may be some tasks involved, but it's very much kind of internal work. It's planning for myself to slow down, to become more open, more available, to be better at noticing what God's doing, to be ready for what he might say in those moments, to experience them in an embodied way that is deeper than I did maybe last year. And that's on a different plane.
Right. Cause it feels, it's not like preparing a meal, like where you've got things in front of you. It's like thinking, like it feels very like disconnected in a way, which ironically, like we believe it's deeply connected to who we are and everything we do. So let me ask, how do you do that work? What does that work look like? Maybe this is a leading question into what we're coming to next week, but like practically, what would you, you know, I love the analogy of tearing down idols. I love that language. I use it when I write songs. I love liturgies and the church calendar, but like practically, what does that mean?
Yeah. Well, I think there's dozens of examples. This is something we talk about a lot when we talk about formation or rule of life. We're talking about, you know, making decisions that maybe might remove or subtract something that is bogging me down. It could even be a good thing, but it's just getting in the way. And so the one that I'm always struggling with, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but it's my smartphone, right? It's constantly going back every time there's some white space, going back to that scrolling, just looking at stuff that isn't bad necessarily, but it's just taking my time, my attention. It's doing something in the wiring of my brain. And so that's a great place to start. Maybe it's just not having your phone beside your bed when you wake up in the morning. So those first few moments, you're forced to do something different than look at it, you know, and it could be just acknowledging God's presence. It could be inviting God into your day. It could be just a simple prayer of God, please help me make space today for you. It could be a practice of confession, which is a very kind of Lent-based idea that we might, you know, confess, God, I've done some things that have hurt you, that have hurt others. I've done things that have distanced myself from you or ignored you or whatever. Mm. Make me, you know, please forgive me. But I think the fasting for sure, I mean, talk about a leading question. I'm really excited. I'm not a person who's done a lot of fasting over the years. I mean, I've certainly dabbled with it here and there. But during this season of Lent, I'm committing myself to fast a day a week. Mm. And so starting next week, we're actually going to talk about that on Sunday and invite people who would like to. I know not everyone can do it. Sometimes it's for medical reasons. Mm-hmm. Maybe some people just aren't ready for that, but we'll still be a part of the conversation. But there'll be an invitation for us together as a church to choose a day and to fast one day a week leading up to Easter. And again, that's just an opportunity for us to say no to something that's going to free up some time. It's going to free up some energy, some of our thought life. It's going to help us to kind of focus in and participate in something that Jesus talked about that's a spiritual discipline or a practice that can help us to create space for God. So I'm excited to try that as well. So you can kind of, you know, you can do something that's a little more an everyday practice that is really normal for you, like maybe your phone or whatever, or some kind of prayer, or we can dive into the fasting thing, give that a try with us for the next few weeks and see how that impacts your life with God.
And I'm really excited for this. I'm excited to join you in this grand experiment. I'm the same way. I've done some fasting, but it's not a regular practice. Yeah. It wouldn't be a liturgy in my life, certainly. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try it with you, and I'm excited to see where God meets me in that, where I meet myself in maybe unpleasant ways, right. Which is part of this tearing down idols, right? Like we both meet God and then we like meet ourselves and we're like, oh, I don't like that version of myself.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with like we all know if you're an iPhone user, I'm assuming there's the same thing on Android. We know we can check our screen time, right?
Oh yeah.
But like, who wants to, right? Let's be real, right? Like, we don't really want to dive into that because we know what that says about us, and like, I already feel bad. So like, I don't need the detail. Like,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm just going to say again, if you're listening to this and you are excited or skeptical about fasting, join us for these next couple weeks and these conversations. And if you've got questions, even now, if you're like, oh man, what about this, this, and this, like, send them our way. We would love to have that and to incorporate that in our teaching, and your voice is helpful for helping us figure this out as a church. So,
absolutely. This is just like the other practices we've taken time to look at, like Sabbath, like prayer. So it's very conversational. Like, we'd love to get feedback from people.
Yeah.
It's invitational. You can participate in the teaching without trying the practice if you choose to. Mm-hmm. You can experiment with it. I mean, you can talk about what works well, what doesn't work well. I mean, it's not going to be a burdensome invitation either. We'll make sure that it's a chance to kind of start slow and start small. And, you know, many of us are on this journey together. So, I think it'll be really good.
It's going to be fun. Well, Chris, we've only got like a minute left. Any other thoughts on Lent? Anything that as you were preparing this week, you kind of left on the cutting room floor, or things that have come to you through conversations or further thought?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that's popping out to me, I had a conversation with someone after service on Sunday, and they brought up the fact that I said in the message, maybe the thing that you need to be cautious about is one too many Bible studies.
Yes.
And so, you know, for some people, I don't know if maybe anyone was put off by that comment. But I think there's something to be touched on there as well, right? We're very prone to engage in a lot of quote unquote spiritual activity, mm-hmm. For the sake of our relationship with God. I think it is something that needs to be evaluated in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I talk to people all the time who are, you know, going to multiple Bible studies, maybe engaged in multiple community groups and things like that. And none of those things are bad. The question is it having the result that, you know, we're hoping for in terms of aligning our life, to the way of Jesus.
Right.
You know, is the, if I'm engaged in multiple community groups, can I have the same level of depth and vulnerability that's actually leading to transformation as I could in maybe one group?
Yeah.
If I'm studying, you know, in multiple Bible studies, I'm getting a lot of intellectual knowledge. And I may be even kind of living up to a certain standard that I can talk about, but am I experiencing the transformation that I want to be experiencing in terms of the qualities of my life that are aligned to the way of Jesus? And so I would just say, you know, there's good things that we need to remove.
Of course.
Sometimes too. It's not just, you know, the addictions and the, you know, the bad choices that we're making and things like that. Sometimes it's just really good stuff that it's just getting in the way of really being able to notice and hear God and respond in some ways that we really need to. So I just think that should be something we consider as well.
Yeah, I love that. And like my take is always, idols are almost always good things, but they're in the place of God.
Mm.
They've taken that place of Lord in a corner of my life.
Right.
And so I need to remove them. And I don't need, like, doesn't always mean you need to remove them entirely, but it means you need to knock them below.
Yeah.
Jesus is Lord. And I love that what you're saying about Bible studies. I know I actually heard from someone who said like that was so helpful and so good. And it, like, as I'm sitting here thinking, even the analogy, right, we're called to run the race.
Right.
And it feels like a lot of us want to become nutrition experts,
right,
which doesn't help us run the race. Right. Like it. And that's important. We need to know these things. Obviously we care deeply as a church about biblical literacy.
Yeah.
We have the Word of God. We need it. But like, we're called to run the race.
Yeah, and I mean,
part of it.
I'm in this with you. Like, it's way easier to read a blog or a book about prayer than it is to sit in deep communion with God. Like, you know, I think we just need to confess that. We just need to be real about it. And that's why we're talking about things like Rule of Life, because it's just starting with small practices that we can do regularly that can slowly, you know, help us to grow in these areas.
Yeah.
And so I think that is harder work than just showing up to something and having someone teach you for half an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
We just need to acknowledge that, be real about it, and then begin to do this work of removing things and adding things and re-implementing things that really help us to align our life to the way of Jesus.
Love it. Let's leave it there, Chris. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening along to Postscript. We'll be back next week. Chris and I will be here again. We'll be talking about fasting. So hope to talk to you then.
See you then, Dave. Thanks.